Hi, this is Chris Evans recording a Storage Unpacked podcast. This is the first of 2019, and I'm joined by two hosts. Yay! Martin and Chris Miller. How are you doing, guys?
Hey, Chris. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too, Chris Evans.
Yeah, and to you, Chris. So here we are, a new year, and we thought it might be fun to kick off with a let's call it a prediction show, shall we? An idea of where we think we're going to go in the future. I'm going to start us off by one prediction, if that's okay. And that's to predict that Gavin will not make it back for a podcast in 2019. What do you think?
It depends. I think it depends what he's drinking, whether he's on the Blossom Hill and whether his music tastes improve. He likes a bit of Little Mix, I hear.
Yes, I hear he's obsessed with watching Premier League football, drinking Blossom Hill and listening to crap music. So he may be gone.
Yeah. Yeah, that might be it. Might be just the three of us in the future. So let's see what happens on that one. We'll come back and revisit that later in the year. Let's talk about some storage predictions, because this is a storage podcast. Let's start at the very lowest level and start by thinking, where are we going to head with our media and our componentry this year? What do you reckon, Chris? Kick us off.
I reckon QLC flash, 4-bit-per-cell flash arrays, will capture a portion of the nearline disk market and the fast access archive market as well. They won't blow all slow disk drives away, but they'll capture the fast access part of it.
Would you want to be selling hard drives these days?
Yes, I would. I think it's like tape, I think. I think the hard drives are in a managed unit ship decline, but capacities will keep on going up with MAMA and HAMA from Western Digital and Seagate. We're going to have 16 terabyte disk drives coming along, then 20 terabyte ones, then multi-actuator drives. I think they'll just keep on going along. Nice, solid business.
I think if we were recording this 20 years ago, we'd be talking about 16 gigabyte drives, wouldn't we?
Probably.
Possibly. Yeah. That sounds like pretty straightforward, I think. You know, QLC is going to take over the market. But challenges with that, Martin, what do you reckon?
There will be challenges. I still think the price point will continue to be a challenge for SSD. So hence, the hard drives will continue to sell, because actually the price point for bulk storage, if you want bulk nearline access, you're going to be still with a hard drive. It's going to be very interesting as we get the larger drives, though, as these failure domains grow on an individual drive. I think we're going to have to see new ways of protecting drives, moving away from traditional RAID, certainly RAID 5 and RAID 6. Your rebuild times are just horrendous these days. So I'm expecting to see more work about how you protect. I could also see us almost going straight back to a pure mirroring type. So a RAID 1 or RAID 1.0 possibly come through at some point as the cost per terabyte for your hard drives continues to fall. QLC, we're certainly going to see increased amounts of shipping of that. I think across the market, enterprise, consumer, down into even into phones, I think we'll see that. And then I think we've got, could this be the year of storage class memory, SCM? Are we going to start seeing some standards and server manufacturers really begin to ship this aggressively? Are we going to see operating systems, databases start to take advantage of this? I would hope so. Might still be a little bit early for it. It may be 2020, but I think towards the latter half of 2019, we shall start to see SCM appearing in more standard servers.
Part of the problem there could be the fact that SCM, though, it's difficult to decide where you put it. So you could put it in a host, and we obviously have already seen certain software products like NetApp's MaxData come out to take advantage of that. But you could put it in a storage array, which 3PAR have done with their platform. But it's not like just putting another speed of media in, is it? It's actually very much more intrusive into a server in terms of needing all the support. So do you think that's going to be hampering things, Chris?
Yes, I do. But I think the storage array manufacturers, the block array manufacturers, are making the fastest progress with adopting SCM. So Dell EMC will adopt it later this year, both at the high end and then at the mid-range as well, with Unity and the SC series. HPE will spread it to 3PAR as well as Nimble. And NetApp probably will use SCM caching in their arrays as well as using MaxData to take advantage of SCM in servers. SCM in servers, for some reason, the server manufacturers just don't seem keen. It may be because there aren't any dual port Optane drives at the moment. It may be because NVDIMMs haven't been properly come along, or it may simply be that Optane as a product, as a media, just simply isn't good enough. And we need, say, 4-layer X point instead of the 2-layer X point that we got at the moment.
Yeah, now we haven't seen any advance there, have we? Or have we? in terms of 3D XPoint and new generations of that technology? I might be behind the curve and not spotted it, but I don't think we've seen anything new in that area.
I haven't seen anything at all. And I read into Micron separating itself from Intel over both 3D NAND and 3D XPoint that Micron's frustrated at how Intel's making slow going with Optane and wants to do its own thing with its Quantex product and push it much harder.
Mm. So there's one thing that we could predict, that we'll see Micron bring out their own Optane or even an updated version of Optane. How's that for a prediction?
It's a different one. It's interesting. I don't think anybody's calling that yet. So that will be interesting to see. I think we will see SEM driven by container deployments, actually. I think SEM has some very interesting role in container deployments.
In what way? For the orchestration part?
Yeah, for the orchestration part. I do think we're looking at that and as better ways of potentially expanding your memory space. I don't think we've seen the density yet. I think we need to see much larger Optane devices than we've seen yet. I think once you start to see that, I really do feel you'll see the server manufacturers being pushed into it.
And they'll be offering, in effect, in-memory computing with servers with relatively vast amounts of storage class memory bulking out their DRAM.
Yeah, I think so. Because DRAM's so power-hungry still. I think that's what we might see. So if you want to put big servers in with big in-memory databases, there's a big demand, or some of it's a manufactured demand. As we move to ML and AI type applications, I think it's inevitable we're going to see these much larger memory spaces, and you're just not going to be able to do it all with DRAM. It's just power and cooling is going to be horrendous otherwise.
Maybe HPE will do something with its Synergy composable systems and have a great big pool of SCM available to composable servers.
Yeah, it's possible, I guess. Interesting following up on Martin's idea there. And I think there's a thing we see quite regularly in the industry, and that's the fact that we see advancements in one part of the industry in terms of hardware, and then software catches up, and then vice versa. Software exceeds and hardware has to catch up. I wonder whether we're in a position where the way that we write our applications and application development needs to step up a bit to become more distributed, so that we can run a lot more applications in a container type environment or a distributed environment. That makes the running of a server much more efficient, so we can actually run it at 100% and therefore justify putting in SEM or persistent memory or whatever you want to call it. And until we can get to that point, we're not going to drive the efficiency of the server, and therefore people are a bit reticent to put in expensive componentry into that server because they see the cost not actually working out for them. The TCO doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it's possible at the moment. There is a case with that. I mean, I think application developers, the way applications develop need to change somewhat. You're still seeing a lot of container development, which actually could just be replaced with a VM. I think, but as we start to see microservices and people understanding more, also as you start to see potential serverless, both off and on premises, you mm-hmm. may well see much more efficient use of your compute. You're going to want much higher densities amount of available, accessible memory, but you don't necessarily need it at DRAM.
All right, so who wants to summarize what we think we might have in terms of media predictions then? I think, Chris, you said QLC will be big. Martin, you think SCM will potentially be big. Anything else we're missing in that? I mean, are we going to see the revival of tape as a primary medium? I don't think so. Anything else we think we might have missed there?
Oh, surely it's about time for optical.
I can see the light. I can see the light coming. It's optical.
Oh, shit. Nobody's talked about optical for at least 12 months, maybe. I don't know. I'm sure I must have seen something. Maybe it's a bit longer than that. Or are we all going to be using DNA? That's going to be the future, isn't it? Storing all our data in DNA.
Yeah, but then our data's going to become sort of sentient, and we'll probably be in all kinds of trouble.
Yeah. So maybe that's not a good idea for a little while. Let's move on and talk about standards. Let's talk about things that we see in the industry that are going to move on in terms of that next layer up, about how we interact with some of this stuff. Now, I'm going to pick the most obvious one and say NVMe, because if we don't see NVMe, everybody's going to think we're not aware of what's going on in the market. But I think that's really quite an obvious one. And I'm trying to think if there's anything else outside of that we should really be thinking about.
I think NVMe over fabrics adoption is rapidly becoming a foregone conclusion. I think it's available on Fibre Channel, it's available on TCP, it's available on Ethernet, it's available on InfiniBand. It's just going to happen.
Okay, so here's a question with that then, Chris. So NVMe over TCP seems to be the one for me that takes away that hardware dependence, because then you can put it into a server that's got a generic NIC in it, as long as it's a decent speed. you know, it's going to work quite well. Is that going to be the driver that makes people or allows people to run storage software in the public cloud more efficiently than they could do previously?
I've been seeing NVMe over TCP as a logical progression from ice scuzzy sands. Public cloud adoption of it. Why would the public...
Think about it in this term. Imagine I'm a vendor like Pure Storage and I want to build out an environment where my on-prem and my cloud look the same. And I can now do that because I've got a virtual machine instance that can do that. How's that VM going to talk to the cloud storage? What's its interface going to be? Do I have to plug in something very clunky and have a dedicated virtual machine with physical storage plugged into it? Or can I just say, access a whole load of NVMe devices across the network, some of which could be shared because I could want to run multiple VMs to give me resiliency? So I can see that sort of architecture coming along and being more interesting. People like Weka.io, for instance, doing something similar. They're already doing it today, but this might give them even more leverage.
I found Weka.io's use of NVMe over Fabrics really quite fascinating because basically it's a file system. And I've thought up until now that file systems and NVMe over Fabrics were antithetical to each other, since you'd need the file system to be in the server in order to get NVMe over Fabrics access to drives in the external array.
Yeah, Martin, what do you think, Martin? Does that make sense about the idea of NVMe over TCP in the cloud?
I think so. I think the interesting thing for all these protocols now with TCP is actually seeing what happens with Ethernet full stop. I don't think there's any doubt, but 25 gig wins, then 50. I still see people talking about 100, 40 and 100. That just seems to be wrong. So I think that, and then once we've got these faster than 10 gigs, not fast enough for NVMe over Fabrics. So you need to be running considerably faster than that. So 25, 50 makes sense. And the way it's built up, it means that you can channelize things a bit better. So I would take it down to the Ethernet layer first, see what happens there. And then we may see what happens with the NVMe over Fabric. I don't see NVMe over InfiniBand ever being a thing beyond some edge cases. And and I'm not sure even Fiber Channel, to be honest. I mean, I know the switch vendor, well, one switch vendor would be very keen to see it.
Broadly speaking,
yeah, I don't see it. I see such a pressure to move to Ethernet-based fabrics now, which I hadn't seen before.
I'm not sure. If I were a Fiber Channel SAN user at the moment, it would be easier for me, surely, to go to NVMe over Fiber Channel than to go to NVMe over TCP or NVMe over any other form of Ethernet cable.
Oh, you're gonna move at some point.
Yes, tomorrow instead of today.
Yeah,
I can see that as an initial step. I mean, at the end of the day, if you're looking to do something that de-risks or at least mitigates some of the risk of putting in absolutely brand new infrastructure, then using your existing Fiber Channel switches, if they're capable, and your devices, makes a lot of sense just to upgrade some of that and move on and get the performance boost. Why wouldn't you if it's just a software change? The question really comes when you're refurbishing a data center and starting again. And if you're doing something greenfield, whether you feel it's better to start again and look at the options and say, actually, do you know what? Let's standardize on Ethernet across the board, and then we can plug and play how we want it to be. We don't have to run two networks. That might be the tipping point. And I would say, and this is a question, I guess, for you, Martin, is this going to be any different to the way it was when we saw Fiber Channel over Ethernet, when we saw FCOE yes. come in? And, you know, is this subtly different enough for people to think that a switch is a switch and it can run any protocol, whereas previously they couldn't with FCOE?
I think it is different to FCOE over Ethernet. There seems to be a much wider adoption by some of the upstart vendors. So some of the NVMe over storage arrays. I think a lot of them seem to be a lot happier with the idea of Ethernet as to Fiber Channel.
Yes.
So
XLRO and EA.
Because I think you've got the upstart vendors now who are going to drive it. And the problem with SCOE, there really was only one sort of switch manufacturer really who you were going to buy it from. But that switch vendor will be the one who really wants to push NVMe over Ethernet as well. But I think this time they might actually get it right.
So NVMe over Fiber Channel, I'm sure it's going to happen, but it's probably going to happen and taper off. I mean, the array vendors will surely produce arrays which can take both NVMe over Fiber Channel and NVMe over TCP input. So you can have one array with both protocols and then gradually switch from the Fiber Channel to the TCP one. And as Martin says, steadily move over towards Ethernet.
The difficulty I see probably on this one is, and we've talked about it a number of times over the course of 2018, we've had a number of different guests on who've talked about it, and that's that Fibre Channel was specifically designed as a storage protocol and still has significant value there. The question is whether the gaps in Ethernet can be either mitigated against or can just be accepted, and that we get to a point where we don't really care the fact that it isn't quite as good as Fibre Channel in terms of the lossless side of things. And if we can do that, then Fibre Channel loses out. If we can't do that, Fibre Channel perhaps has a bit more of a life left.
Can we zone Ethernet?
Oh, you can run an FC sort of protocol over the top of it, so you can zone it, but it's not the same thing. I was going to say, Chris, but as we've seen adoption and technology change, as people start to focus more on data as opposed to storage, as they start to look at public cloud and where they're going to gateway into the public cloud, where they're going to still run their compute on premises, the Fibre Channel of things starts to become less compelling. Because everything else, you're going to interact with your off-premises storage via Ethernet. So it becomes more and more of an edge case to having a Fibre Channel.
This plays into the whole multi-cloud adoption idea, I think, where I'm just getting a sense that fewer infrastructure component suppliers will be used, just to simplify matters. And if it's a case of Fibre Channel on-prem and Ethernet in the cloud, then there's an inherent tension there, which will end up with Ethernet taking over, because Fibre Channel, as you say, is an edge case.
And maybe this will be the year that we start to see the relevance in those sort of scenarios becoming less and less, where people will be less concerned about making the choice simply because they're stepping away more and more from running their own physical infrastructure. So maybe they'll get to the point where they care less about making that very, very specific technology choice.
And perhaps, Chris, as we see more orchestration tools come in, it becomes less and less of an issue because you don't care anymore. You're just presenting volumes and your orchestration tool will go ahead and do it. So all you're really worried about is a plugin. So you're not worried about the fact that you can't zone or it's different. This is beginning to go away.
That's been a bit of a holy grail, though, hasn't it? That ability to provision consistently across many environments, especially with your own infrastructure. Do we think that that's likely to change in the next 12 to 18, 24 months? Or is that simply because the environments are more simplified than they used to be?
I'm going to put a foot in the water here and say I think the whole idea of multi-cloud adoption is going to drive a great simplification of IT. Because if you bothered with the details of renting your own Google Cloud Platform compute and storage and your own AWS compute and storage and your own Azure compute and storage, it's horrendous. You've got these different environments. Enterprises surely will not want to know. They'll want to treat the multi-cloud, multiple public clouds and the on-premises as a single environment and be able to move VMs and containers back and forth between them, storage back and forth between them as well, or other data. And that'll encourage the enterprises to have some kind of abstraction layer to virtualize these multiple cloud services and present them with a single layer through which they can use things. Surely it's bound to happen.
So we talked, Martin, on the last podcast that we published about the whole idea about whether we were doing storage or data asset management and what data management really came. It sounds to me like Chris is sort of setting the scene there for us to say that actually, as we move forward, we're going to have more of that data asset management task going on rather than physical hardware. And ultimately, we're going to be concerned in 2019 and going onwards more with the data itself than we are concerned with the infrastructure.
But we say this every year, Chris, and we still end up talking about storage management.
Yeah, we do. No, we do. Right. We talk about this every year, and we always say, death of the storage engine. We always say it's going to go away, but it just seems to hang on in there, doesn't it, I guess?
I think because data is actually such a abstract concept for a lot of people, whereas storage is something they can understand. They can understand blocks, they can understand files. But when you start talking about data, people often seem to glaze over. Perhaps we need some data management evangelist to go and talk about what data is, what it means, and getting a better handle of it, moving away from the bytes and blocks.
It occurs to me that we have an open systems interconnect, the OSI model for networking. Presumably that took a lot of time and a lot of debate before it came into being. Well, perhaps we need an open data management model too.
Oh God, hope not. Not anything like OSI, which got completely ignored by everybody and was only ever an exam question.
Oh dear. Oh dear. I just got smacked.
Wasn't OSI the organization that Steve Austin worked for?
Oh yeah, I think so as well. Yeah.
When I think of OSI, that's the only thing I ever think of.
We have a standard networking model, don't we, with the various layers?
Yeah, we do, absolutely, yeah.
You do. The problem is it doesn't map to the most common network protocol. It doesn't really map to the Ethernet model. We get weird and wonderful crossovers. It's not a perfect match, which is what's always confused everybody.
We do have, is it a 7-layer Ethernet model or networking model?
It is. I think it's a 7-layer cake, isn't it, Chris?
You're asking the wrong person about networking. Right. And the last person you should be asking about anything to do with networking. A, because I don't know, and B, because I care even less than I know.
Yeah, it's a 7-layer.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah.
So we've got this networking system model that characterizes and standardizes network communications for a computing system without regard to the underlying individual layer structures and technologies. You just, as long as something plugs into a layer boundary, then it's fine. Perhaps we need an open data management system or model that does the same kind of thing. It characterizes and standardizes data management functions of a computer system and has solid layer to layer boundaries so that you, at one particular layer, you don't care what goes on below because it just presents itself through a layer interconnect. I think I'm talking like a prat here.
No, I think you are talking to a certain degree of sense. The difficulty, I think, in achieving that is the piece Martin was talking about earlier, and that's that difference of persistence versus non-persistence, which you have on a network, where, you know, at the end of the day, you're playing hot potato past the parcel on a network, and all you do is want to get rid of the packet, and if it all dies and you start it again, life carries on. The difference, I think, with data, and then let's call it data and storage, is that you end up with a situation of having to maintain integrity and persistence as well. And I'm not sure where you'd fit that into your model. And that might be the hard piece, because you could separate the model into transport, into the storage medium in terms of persistence, and then you'd have to have another layer for presentation. But somehow maintaining that persistence in there might be the tricky bit to get defined correctly.
Oh, it sounds like a job for Sneer.
Yes. Let me come at it from a different way. We've got secondary data storage sprawl. More or less everybody agrees with that. We've got companies like Actifio and Cohesity and Delphix and Catalogic, maybe Rubrik, all saying we need to somehow converge secondary data onto a few master copies and then farm them out to test and dev, analytics, archiving, data governance, and so forth. So this seems to me an area where enterprises and certain suppliers are saying you need a standard data management system. And that will enable you to have much more efficient secondary data storage and much more efficient use of secondary data. Am I being a prat again?
No, I don't think we're disagreeing with you. I think you're entirely right. The difficulty is how we go about it, because we don't really have the equivalent of like that one dominant player like they had in networking. Now, I could be wrong, but I would say that networking was, to a certain degree in recent years, driven by the fact that you had that one dominant player.
Cisco.
Now, we don't really have that in the storage industry, even though you could say, theoretically, EMC was in that position. They never really drove any standards on new products. And
the whole content management area was a disaster for them.
Yeah, absolutely. So maybe if we'd had that, we would have been in a better position. And maybe we're more fragmented in storage. And that could be part of the problem. So maybe a prediction for 2019 is we need to see some more, or we should see some more, we need to see some more, or we will see some more data management solutions coming along that try to fix this problem, because the problem is going to get worse as we have a very distributed multi-cloud environment.
I think we will see more solutions. I think they will all be distinctly average. and I think we'll still see the problem, which we've seen for a long time, and the storage industry is not very good at cooperating with each other. So with the standards which we need, it just won't happen.
Yeah, SMIS. I'm waving the SMIS flag in the air there when you say that, Martin, about cooperation.
Let's take up things like CDMI. Yeah. CDMI has not really happened because it's a dominant de facto standard.
Yes. So object storage, we've got S3 becoming a standard way of accessing object storage because of AWS's dominance. In the data management area, there isn't a single dominant supplier. However, IBM has just done an OEM deal with Actifio. And that seems to me to say that if IBM thinks secondary data storage sprawl is worth dealing with through an OEM deal with Actifio, then Dell EMC, HPA NetApp, are going to have to partner with or acquire data management companies like Actifio, Cohesity, Delphix, Rubrik, people like that.
I imagine those companies are sitting there quite pleased then. Waiting for somebody to come along and sweep them up. But
what's that expensive sound we hear? It's fingers rubbing them against each other.
Yeah, it's the steepled fingers of the investment bankers that have put their money into them. But they're expensive companies now, so there's got to be a real justification of that if you are going to buy Cohesity or Rubrik because they've had a lot of money.
Then probably OEM deals will come instead.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say they appear to be expensive companies. It'd be interesting to see what their figures really are. So yeah, at some point, somebody's going to look at thinking, do I keep throwing good money after bad? I'm not saying it is bad money, but if it is really something and whether they really do get the traction which the investment suggests they should do, I still don't see it, certainly at the enterprise level. Because I think that whole area of secondary storage is still very difficult and very complex, and the messaging has not been brilliant.
It's awfully complicated. Cohesity says it's a $200 million plus run rate company now.
The question there is that because they're doing more efficient backup and they've just stolen backup market share from other people? Or is that because people are genuinely spending the majority of their time using that as a secondary data source and actually mining that data and doing more with it? I'd be interested to understand what that split is.
So would I. I'd be really, really interested. If Cohesity is using backup as just a means of getting data from production systems into its secondary data stores, then it's just another backup company. If it's using it to really pump data into its secondary stores and then deliver that out to other people that need it and manage that secondary data better, then possibly all backup companies are going to have to make a choice. Are they going to be a standalone backup company, or are they going to have to become data management companies as well?
I think a lot of them would argue they were already data management companies, but whether they were or not, it doesn't matter. If you actually think that from a backup vendor, there's only one, actually, I'd be maybe two independent backup vendors who aren't backed with a storage product. Because if you think about Legato and TSM, both are backed up with storage products. Veritas isn't.
Commvault isn't.
And Commvault isn't as such. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting to see whether Veritas, who knows? I could see that being a fire sale in 2022.
That's a good prediction. We're predicting 3 years ahead. That's fine. Yeah. I'll take that one, Martin. I'll write that down, put it in an envelope and save it in the future.
Yeah. And what else did we talk about?
Commvault.
I mean, Chris, Mr. Mello, you've written about this, I think, in the past, that Commvault may have had the odd issue.
It certainly has, but I think Robert Hammer, is doing an absolutely stellar job in managing that company and changing it, especially under the sort of impetus of an activist investor sitting on his shoulders as well. I wouldn't write Commvault off at all. I think it's going to be a survivor.
Okay, so we talked a little bit about challenges there and we sort of dropped into the vendor section. So why don't we wrap up and just see if we think we've missed anything else about vendors that we should be predicting. Do we think has anybody got any suggestions on acquisitions or vendors who'll do well in the next 12 months or vendors who might not do so well in the next 12 months?
I think Pure will continue to do well.
Yes.
I think they're a very impressive marketing machine. Their messaging for a lot of people is very good. They will continue to grow, certainly within the SME market. I think they may still struggle in some of the enterprise markets, but Pure definitely grow. I think the industry may have almost got to a stage where they've let another NetApp happen, something which they all said they would never do. And then Pure may get to a stage where they're almost too big to buy unless someone like Cisco decides they're going to come in and do it. Or let's hope for the other storage vendors, something like Oracle comes and buys them.
Gosh. That would be an upset.
Yeah, it would. And all the other storage end vendors would rub their hands with glee at that point.
Do you think Nutanix is another possible NetApp class supplier?
See, I think they're heading in a different direction. So they're clearly, in one way, they started with a storage-based message all those years ago. But I think they're desperately trying to get away from that. And they're really, really about ecosystem and hybrid and multi-cloud applications. I think they absolutely desperately want to head down that route. And I would imagine that they would not want to be considered as an equivalent to a NetApp. But having said that, NetApp isn't NetApp anymore. So, you know, NetApp's itself trying to get away from being a storage company and being what they class as a data management company. So maybe the whole idea of being something that's called a storage company isn't going to be as popular in the next 12 to 24 months.
But it's where we will continue to see the most market fragmentation, which is interesting. So lots of people try and be calling themselves as data management companies, but for every company exists calling themselves a data management company, there will be a different meaning for data management.
Yes, it's like software-defined storage. And unless you add a follower that says you're a follower, a SAN or a NAS or an object storage or something, just to say you're software-defined storage doesn't tell you very much at all. And to say you're in data management, well, indeed. Well, what does that actually mean?
Yeah, I think maybe that's the one thing that 2019 would be good to solve, Chris, is what you've said many times already, and I think you said on the previous podcast as well, is that whole idea of what is data management and how do we get our hands around what the features and functionality are that you require to do in air quotes, which you can't see, data management properly. You know, that I think could be one of the biggest missing pieces in the industry that we really need to solve.
Yeah. There seems to be a group of vendors, StoreOne, Redux.io, Elastifile, and others, and I think they merged in 2018, and whether they will carry on making progress in 2019 is going to be really, really interesting to see. Weka.io seems to be taking off. It's got this very, very high performance stuff. The NVMe upstart seems to be taking off as well, especially E8 and Accelero. There's a whole raft of small HCI vendors, Maxter, DataCore, and so forth, Scale, and it'd be great if they could take off as well, but I'm not sure whether they will.
If we look at Scale, for instance, because we've discussed this before, Mr. Evans, but we both like Scale, and we almost, their lack of ambition is their biggest strength, because they know where they play, they know the market they play in, they don't want to rule the world. They're quite happy being who they are today. And that is where they will probably survive and continue. They have very loyal customers. And as long as they don't end up with greedy investors who suddenly want to make billions, they will plow a very happy field, which nobody else is that interested in, or feels like nobody else is that interested in.
So that does make me think that we have a question to ask as to whether every single storage company that comes to market needs to be as big and as bold as Pure Storage, or whether there's still plenty of niches left within the industry that people can play in and still make money.
Oh, obviously there are. I would say our friends in Wales, Object Matrix, seem to be doing very well for themselves by ploughing a very niche area of storage. They know the market very well. They know the people very well, and they're happy to play there.
And there are several standalone backup vendors who are very happy doing what they're doing and getting quite substantial on the proceeds of it, with Asigra, Acronis, Veeam, of course.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it seems to me that in terms of where we see things that might go in the next 12 months, we see no reason to think that there should be any mass consolidation in the market. There seems to be enough space for everybody to still exist. Although there'll be companies who do die and come back, it does seem to be that there's a market that's big enough for plenty of players here.
I'd like to raise a questioning note about that. Mm-hmm. I think that there are possibly one or two too many SAN vendors, and that's both hybrid and all-flash array SAN vendors. And I think also in the filer space, there may be one or two too many there. And we may not see exits in 2019, but we'll possibly see signs of distress from some of the smaller vendors in the all-flash array, all-flash block array space, and in the filer space as well.
And I would wonder with that, Chris, I'll add a little bit on top of that. Is that because being a niche player in, say, those sort of markets is actually very difficult compared to being, say, a Pure or, you know, a Dell EMC? And you really do need to have some other value add and something very, very specific that nobody else has got, or you have to be selling as part of a solution.
Yes, yes. So take Caminario. It's decided it can't just sell a bog standard all flash array. It's gone into composability. It's doing the relationship with Western Digital and its composable systems area. The whole idea of having a composable storage array that plays nice with other composable IT components seems to me to be a real solid idea for Caminario.
Yeah, okay. Makes sense. Any other thought there, Martin?
No, I think it could be the year for some vendors to rein in their ambition and work out how they survive the next 2 years, because there will be market consolidation and there will be failure. So there will be those people who have well-defined markets, and if they can actually manage those markets well, they can probably come out in 2021 in a much stronger position than those companies who are spreading themselves too thin.
So I guess summing up then, guys, if we're trying to work out where we think we are at the lower end of the market, we see business as usual, better, faster, cheaper in terms of media and all that side of things. We see some incremental improvements in things like the protocol side of things. But ultimately, it seems to be that more and more of our challenges are coming around what we've seen over many years, and that's coping with this volume of data and now coping with our hybrid environments where potentially we could have data spread across many, many locations. And in actual fact, perhaps the challenge for 2019 and where we might see some improvements is in how we actually deal with that side of things, because it seems to be the lower end of the market seems to be pretty well sorted. Martin, well, you know, do you agree with that as an analysis, or, you know, would you just like to be contrarian and say something different?
No, I don't. I tend to agree. I tend to agree that certainly within the enterprise, the fragmentation we've seen at the moment within where data lives means that we need to see something to enable us to use it better. There is this fear of missing out on your value of data, which then drives a fear of deletion. I think understanding our data landscape is becoming more important, but nobody quite knows what to do with it. And maybe 2019, we'll see the first green shoots of somebody coming up with some ideas how we really do this.
That seems to me very, very pertinent. I think Hammerspace and other metadata farmers are looking at this idea of secondary data sprawl and thinking something has to be done. It's an unsolvable problem, but there doesn't seem to be any one supplier yet which has the handle on the problem. So I think we're going to see fragmented approaches in 2019 as the industry struggles to try to come up with some kind of coherent data management message.
Okay, well, on that note, guys, thank you very much for joining again. I'm sure there's a million and one things that we've missed out, forgotten, should have talked about, but, you know, we can't sit here for 4 hours because I don't think anybody would be listening at the end of it. So I hope we've covered the right things in this conversation, but if we haven't, everybody knows where we are. They can get in contact and they can talk to us, I guess. You know, give us their opinions and we'd be very happy to hear it.
Lovely.
Okay. As usual, you can find us at Storage Impact Online. You can find us at Storage Impact on Twitter. And of course, you can find us on LinkedIn. And we'd be very happy to have your feedback and let us know what you think is going to happen for 2019. Thanks again, guys.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Hey, we got through a whole podcast, I think, without talking about Kubernetes. How unusual is that for anybody in IT at the moment?